I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove from the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Hiram Ring is a singer-songwriter and one of the Lancaster music scene's favorite adopted sons. Raised in Ghana, Africa, Hiram's family moved to Lancaster during his late teens. He called Lancaster home for several years after attending college in upstate New York, but now he spends most of his time in Singapore, where he's enrolled in a PhD program studying language documentation. In 2009, Hiram released his first full-length album, Breathe Deep, which took him on a several-month national tour. Hiram's music is deeply informed and inspired by his Christian faith, but its pop and folk crossover appeal has garnered strong support from both the Christian and secular music scenes in central Pennsylvania. While visiting Lancaster over the holidays in December 2010, Hiram stopped by the Woodstove House to talk about his life and studies in Singapore and to share some new tracks that he's been working on in his free time. But joining me in the Woodstove House is Hiram Ring. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
It's been a while since you were here last, and there's so many cool things that you've been doing with music and outside of music that I want to talk about.
Has it really been that long?
Well, no. I mean,
like last summer, like 6 months?
No, it was 10 months ago.
10 months ago, okay.
Yeah, it was in the middle of the winter.
Okay.
At that time, I don't think that you had even really made any definitive plans on where you would be.
Yeah, you know, where I was going.
Where you were going and where you would end up in life at this moment.
Right.
So you just got back from somewhere. Tell us.
Yes, I've been in Singapore for the last 4 months. And I've been studying linguistics. There's a PhD program that I got into, specifically looking at languages that are endangered or going to be endangered in the next 50 to 100 years and trying to document those languages. So I have 6 courses that I have to take. I finished 3 of them this past semester and 3 more this coming semester, and then I'll be set to go and actually do research on languages in Northeast India.
And then how long until you actually finish the program?
The program is about 4 years, so I've got 3.5 to go.
Okay.
Yeah. With the goal of writing a grammar of one of these languages as my dissertation.
So these languages are undocumented?
Yeah, pretty much. Basically just spoken languages.
Wow.
Some of them do have alphabets that are not really used, or writing systems that are not really used very much. But for the most part, they're just spoken languages. There's like 6,000 languages in the world, and there's still about 2,000 that have not been documented.
There's 6,000 languages in the world?
At least, yeah.
I thought there was like 12.
Yeah,
okay, maybe,
right.
maybe I knew
12,000?
Maybe I knew there was more than 12, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
That just sounds extraordinary.
Yeah, well, some of them are only spoken, like in Papua New Guinea, there's 1,200 languages on the island of New Guinea, and some of those languages are only spoken by a handful of people, 30 people. But because of like Papua New Guinea's terrain, those languages are actually quite viable, and they keep teaching them to their children, even though, you know, there's only a community of 30 people. They keep teaching it to their children. Whereas in other places in the world, if you have a community of 100 speakers, that language is probably going to die out within a generation.
Wow.
So Papua New Guinea is kind of a unique place in that sense. But that's actually the concern for a lot of these languages elsewhere, is that the parents are not teaching the children their language.
Mm.
And so within a generation, 2 generations, that language will no longer be spoken. The people will have switched to something else.
These languages that are isolated like that, mm-hmm. are they, how closely related, are they sort of derivative of another neighboring language, or are they really distinct?
In some cases, they are derivative, but they're still distinct, like English and German. Because we can say, you know, if we go back far enough, 100, 200 years, we can really see the similarity between English and German. And at one time, they were probably the same language, you know, the Norman tongue, essentially. And then when people migrated from one place to another, that's when those languages started to diverge. And sometimes that's all it takes is geographic isolation.
Sure.
For languages to diverge, and then also influence from other languages. So it's language is kind of a complex thing. It's always changing. I mean, English has been changing for however right. long it's been around.
Right.
But being able to describe it, to get a snapshot of it at a certain point in time, is really helpful for people who are studying languages and how humans think in general. So it's, yeah.
Well, that's some exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Have you experienced any of these languages that you're going to explore firsthand? In other words, have you met anybody who's speaking one of these sort of languages that are very, that are endangered?
Well, I grew up in Ghana.
Right.
And in Ghana, there's about 60 different languages. Now, most of those are not endangered. Most of those are pretty vibrant.
Okay.
So I haven't really met anyone who speaks one of these languages that are in danger of dying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm familiar with many different languages. And Singapore is a pretty multilingual society. They speak English primarily. That's kind of the language of government and of education. But then they also have, I think, four official languages that they also teach in school as subjects that are related to people's ethnicity.
Okay.
So they have Tamil from India, they have Mandarin from China, and English and Malay. Those are kind of the primary ones, but you can also learn like Hindi or other Indian languages.
Do the people there in Singapore have a pretty good understanding of those languages even without training? In other words, in the United States, you mm-hmm. know, English is obviously the primary language,
right?
And now we have Spanish,
mm-hmm.
but still there's just so many people that don't have any. I mean, if I hear somebody speaking Spanish, I really don't know what they're saying.
Right. Even though you might have learned it in school.
Yeah, right.
Well, it used to be that most of the people in Singapore spoke some variety of Chinese
okay.
as their mother tongue in their homes. And Chinese is kind of a blanket term because all the Chinese languages use the same script. They all use characters.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is that when you speak to each other, often one person who speaks a language can't understand someone who's speaking Chinese in a different area. So that's why you have Mandarin, Cantonese. These are what are termed as like dialects.
Mm-hmm.
Mandarin is now the official language. So everyone in China learns Mandarin. Well, 20, 30 years ago in Singapore, the main spoken languages that people spoke were Mandarin, Hokkien, Teochew, and a few other varieties of Chinese. They could all understand, you know, if you were to write something in Chinese, they would all be able to understand each other. But if they were to speak to each other, they wouldn't necessarily
sure.
understand each other. So the government decided that they were going to make Mandarin the official language.
In China, the government of China.
In China, but also in Singapore. So the Chinese that they teach, the spoken Chinese, is Mandarin.
It's Mandarin, okay.
Even though most of the people didn't speak Mandarin, they spoke Hokkien.
Okay.
So it's kind of an interesting situation because
how long ago did this happen?
This happened in the, I think in the 70s, 70s or 80s. And yeah, I should probably know that, you know, since I'm living there. But so basically you have a situation where kids are learning Mandarin in school as their mother tongue,
mm-hmm.
even though at home they speak Hokkien.
Wow.
So,
could you imagine having? I know you lived in Ghana until you were a teenager, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And then, of course, over here in the United States, could you imagine if the United States decided to do something like that?
Yeah.
how maddening it would be.
Yeah. Although, I mean, with English, there aren't really that many. we still divide. It would be okay if, for example, French and English used the same exact writing system.
Right.
Okay. And most of us spoke English to each other, but we wrote French. Okay.
I can't even imagine.
And then the government said, okay,
we're going to switch to French.
We're going to require French to be the national language. Well, we all speak English to each other, but French is the national language. We write in French.
That's what I'm saying. It would be madness.
Totally weird. But that's why, I mean, China defines these spoken varieties as dialects of Chinese.
Mm. But they're different. We think of dialects in our country as the difference between a southern accent and a,
right, accent.
And a Philly accent.
Right, exactly. And for a linguist, they're dealing mostly with spoken language.
Mm.
And so if two varieties of spoken language are unintelligible to each other, we would consider that to be a separate language.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, with accents, like someone who's speaking Scottish English, some of them are very difficult to understand.
Definitely.
For me.
Yeah.
But if I live there for long enough, I will be able to understand their dialect. So in that sense, their pronunciation, it may be an initial barrier, but I can still learn, you know,
yeah,
to understand them. So that's really more of a language. You know, we share the same language.
We share the same language, but we just speak a little bit
differently.
Yeah.
Right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So the definition of language, often when it becomes politicized, like it has been in China, the Chinese people consider themselves one people.
Right.
Well, language and identity are so intertwined that if you were to separate those out and say, well, but I speak a different language, even though we're one people, people often see that as a threat. You know, diversity is a threat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily. And I think that's one thing people are starting to realize, is that diversity can be a great asset if you're united on so many other things.
I don't know the roads, but I know the direction I'm traveling in.
You know, last year when you were here at the Wood Stove House, we talked about the tour that you did to support your first album,
mm-hmm.
Breathe Deep, and talked a lot about some of the, you know, the shows and the album itself. How has moving to Singapore and eventually beyond Singapore to study for the next 3 or 4 years, how has that changed your sort of outlook or your perspective on what you're going to do musically or what you've been doing musically?
Well, I think this is something I've been struggling with for the last year and a half, something like that. And I came to the conclusion that I would always do music at some point, you know, or in some way.
Yeah.
But what that would look like, I was open to change. And I think I'm always someone who wants to learn. I'm always interested in learning new things. And I felt like this opportunity, you know, to go and study in Singapore. First of all, I'd never been to Asia.
Mm.
So there's a huge opportunity for learning in that sense. Just new places, new people, new ways of thinking. So I really felt like I had to do this. You know, I had to step out of my comfort zone, and I had to go somewhere new.
You were just getting started.
Yeah.
As a professional songwriting musician.
Yeah,
I would say. Meaning, you know, 3 or 4 years into a career, a really good, strong album, mm-hmm. some touring, a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
But I completely get this idea of, you know, moving on and doing something else.
Yeah.
Are you still using that momentum to carry your music, even though you're obviously been very busy?
Yeah.
With your studies?
I think so. I've been trying to keep people updated. You know, I send out a monthly newsletter People can sign up for that on my website if they're interested. Just keeping people updated on what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm still writing music, you know, like I'm still writing songs.
Right. Good.
And I've been able to find a studio over there to record at.
Yeah. I want to talk about that because, one of the things that I was most intrigued by, with you over the last couple of years was mm-hmm. Your way of keeping people informed using all this new media, video blogging and social media. And so, you know, I've kept up with you since then, mm-hmm. The same way, and saw that you were recording some new music in a recording studio in Singapore. So let's start with that. How did you find or come across this recording studio? I mean, look, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah,
I thought when you went over there, it was going to be a couple years
before anything,
and understandably, and that's cool.
Yeah,
but you know, I take a couple of years and do some studies, and then I'll be back, make another record. 3 months later, I'm seeing updates of you in a recording studio.
Yeah.
So how did you find this recording studio to work in?
Well, I knew when I was heading over to Singapore that I had been working on a bunch of these tracks for the past year, you know, since the first album. And I felt like they just weren't quite where I wanted them to be musically, and recording wise, the quality wasn't as good as I wanted them to be. But I knew going to Singapore that, I mean, it's a city state, and it's really modern. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, you know, there's got to be a studio in Singapore that I can record at. So I'll bring my guitar and I'll keep people updated online. So I did a Google search for recording studio in Singapore.
There you go.
I found some guys who had just put together a studio and had some really good equipment. And they had a good website that kind of listed everything and talked about the projects that they had done. And they were pretty young, and they were really interested in just, you know, making a name for themselves and getting up and running. So I went and I talked to them, and I figured, you know, I'll do an hour or two, just record something, see what kind of a sound I get. If I like it, then, you know, I'll talk to them about putting a whole album together or so.
So where are you at in that right now? Like, where are you at in that progress?
The first session went really well, and I felt really comfortable. The room that they have is isolated. It's a nice room for guitars and vocals, and they're willing to try, you know, a few new things. They mostly record church bands and help churches kind of produce their albums. Mm-hmm. But they do a lot of other stuff as well, and they had a really good system. Just the equipment was really nice, really friendly, gave me a good deal. And I think they like working with me because they haven't really had anyone like a singer-songwriter to record. And so I kind of bring a new perspective,
sure,
you know, to their recording process.
Yeah.
And because I do engineering as well, so I'm familiar with what they're doing, and we can communicate on a really good level. So
what was the result of those first sessions?
So the first sessions, I just recorded like one or two songs, and then I said, okay, I like what I'm getting.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
This is what I'm going to do next. And so I came back and I recorded 23 guitar tracks, to a click track of songs that I'd been working on. And then I came back and I recorded vocals. So kind of two separate sessions. It might have been actually three, but just on the weekends when I had time, you know, I wasn't studying, or mm-hmm. I'd finished all my studying for the day and would come in and just cut guitar vocals. So at this point, I've got those tracks with me. They have a Pro Tools system, and they just gave me all the files. And so this morning, actually, back here in Lancaster, I cut some drum tracks with a friend. So I've got some stuff that I can work with.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping while I'm here in Lancaster to do some more drum tracking and maybe sit down with a friend who plays keyboard and do some Rhodes or, you know, other stuff, and then take it back to Singapore and they'll mix it for me. It's cool. It's like, you know, another another project to work on, you know, when I'm sick of reading, you know, all these, or writing papers or whatever.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. My guest today is Hiram Ring. While visiting Lancaster in December 2010, Hiram shared a few rough tracks of the new songs that he's been working on while studying in Singapore.
Let's talk about some of these songs. Talk about All I Want.
Cool. All I Want is, I guess, my world-traveling song in a lot of ways. I feel like in a lot of my life, I'm looking for someone to share my life with, and it's still in the works, you know.
Yeah,
it's still
yeah.
coming. It hasn't that thought or dream hasn't been realized yet, and so I kind of took that idea and gave it a very kind of world traveling kind of perspective. And I'd been reading T.S. Eliot a little bit, and he has some really good poetry. And one of his concepts was, I forget the quote exactly, but to return to where you started and to know the place for the first time. And I thought that was a really good...
Yeah.
Really good metaphor, you know. And I feel like... in order to know where you are, often you have to leave and go somewhere else. Like, you can't really appreciate your home until you've gone away from home. And then you can really appreciate it.
I traveled all around the world, sailed the seven seas, always searching for that missing part of me. Took myself to foreign lands, walked on crowded streets to learn the colors of the human tapestry. And somewhere on the mountaintop that scraped the evening sky, I heard the lonely howling wind echoing my soul with its cry. Singing why, oh why? 'Cause all I want is a hand to hold, a place to come in from the cold night air, someone to welcome me home. Maybe what I need is you.
The song "My Lord," I really like this. I really like this groove. It reminds me of early 20th century stuff. You know, I don't know, post vaudeville.
Yeah,
kind of traveling troubadour kind of.
Yeah,
kind of.
Well, I've been. People ask me like who I sound like, and I say, well, kind of a cross between Jack Johnson and Bob Dylan. And I think over the last year, I've been going more in the direction of Bob Dylan.
Gotcha.
You know,
yeah.
And really getting into more traditional folk sounds.
Yeah.
And so this song I actually started writing probably a year and a half ago. It was actually going to be Matt Monticchio and I were working on tracks, and we were thinking of trying to do something for like Holy Week, or you know, the kind of the celebration of Easter, and I thought this would be a really good song for like Palm Sunday, you know. But then I thought, well, it's not enough, you know, just to talk about Christ as the reigning king, and is there another twist that we can add to it? And so I liked that, you know, heavy drinking man.
Yeah.
Because it's like you don't really think of Christ as someone who drank a lot of alcohol. But...
It's usually not on the
ads. And there's a lot of people who avoid alcohol completely, but when you realize that Christ drank the heaviest drink that anyone could ever drink, you know, he took the full wrath of God on himself for our sins. I mean, Scripture even uses that as a metaphor. You know, the cup of wrath
That's powerful.
It really is.
My Lord is a donkey riding man. My Lord is a donkey riding man. When my Lord comes to town, he doesn't need a crown. My Lord is a donkey riding man. My Lord is a heavy drinking man. My Lord is a heavy drinking man. He said, Lord, please take this cup, but if you fill it, I'll drink every drop. My Lord is a heavy drinking man.
Let's talk about this lamp.
I guess I've been playing it for about a year, and it's basically the story of an old house that's been abandoned, and it's just waiting for its inhabitant, you know, to return. It's a really good metaphor for longing and just patience, and I think in a lot of ways that's the way God feels toward us, you know, toward me. That he's always there, and he always will be. And he's just waiting for me to realize that. And I've been thinking a lot about this idea of home. What is home? Where do I find my home? And really, if my home is God, is Christ, then wherever I go, I'm at home.
This lamp is an old one. Doesn't shine so bright. The metal's lost its luster, but it warms up the night and lights the way for you to come back home. The candle is a flicker of the flame it once was. The gleam is just a glimmer, memory of love that held the stars in their place and waits for you to come back home. And I haven't moved since that day.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down. I know you've got a busy schedule. And you're just in Lancaster for a few weeks.
Got to go practice for church on Sunday.
Yeah, so I appreciate it, man. Thanks for stopping by the Wood Stove House and filling us in on what's going on.
Hey, thanks for having me again. It's been really great.
My pleasure.
Hiram Ring is a singer-songwriter from Lancaster who is now living and studying in Singapore. He still manages to find time to work on new music, and we look forward to a new album in the near future. To keep up with Hiram's adventures, visit him online at hiramring.com or link up from our website, woodstovehouse.com. where you can listen to past episodes, find show notes, or email feedback.
Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.
Ah, right.